Ryan, when it's the holidays, everybody needs to get gifts for people, right? And now we're heading into the Thanksgiving holiday season, which is followed by Black Friday. And the folks at Home Field Apparel, they're going to help out our listeners, no question.
They are. And so what I want you to do, you're going to go to homefieldapparel.com. You're going to look at the Minnesota gear, including that beautiful bomber jacket, whatever it may be. But when you get to checkout, use promo code Black Friday, all one word, to save 20% off your order. We love you guys. We love our listeners. We know our promo code of GG23 is only 15% off. So we want to make sure you get the best bang for your buck at Home Field Apparel. It's high quality stuff. We've talked about them for months, if not years. When you get to the checkout, promo code Black Friday, all one word, to save 20% off your order.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to yet another drumming in the month of November as your Golden Gophers head into the horseshoe. And they are absolutely trampled by the number two Ohio State Buckeyes in a 37-3 loss. Derek Burns got so disgusted, he's not even joining us today.
I don't think that's the case, but sure.
Well,
he had some conflicts, but yeah.
Athlete-related things, and I would think everyone here can agree that's a little bit more important than talking about a 5-touchdown loss. So unfortunately, Luke, people get to listen to my dulcet tones maybe a little bit more, and they also get to have a – I know you and I disagree on some things with the way things played out in this game, so hopefully for – seemingly too often this season. Hopefully it's a little bit at least cathartic for many of our listeners.
Yeah, we'll see where it takes us. Again, the Gophers lose 37-3. I look at this game as a tale of three parts if you listen to like This American Life. You know, the first half, we're going to play to keep it close. Hopefully they'll make a mistake and we can capitalize. And then we got to the second part, which was the third quarter, and oh my goodness, they scored 17 points. By the way, on the very first play, Travion Henderson goes 75 yards for a touchdown. And then in the third part, it was like, this game's pretty much over. Everybody's just trying to get off the field. And ultimately the Gophers are able to score three and the Buckeyes are able to score one more touchdown. Ryan, I think we'll take our normal approach and we can start with defense again. I think if you watch this game, given the injury kind of situation and where they were, I thought the Gopher defense played pretty admirably, especially in the first half, to their advantage. They had Ohio State having to take long fields because of some offensive choices and choosing to punt the ball. But that was very deliberately a strategy from the onset. And the Gopher defense was able to hold Ohio State to, you know, only 13 points, and they got in the red zone a couple times and forced field goals. Now the second half's a totally different story, but you were able to see this group is decimated at linebacker. They're obviously struggling. They took an injury again at safety. So they're struggling there to a certain extent as well. But only holding them to 13 points seems sort of like a win. Now, if you look at that just irregardless of offense, I think you'd take that as a good outcome for that defense in the first half.
If there's one thing positive that you can say that is unequivocally true, it's that Minnesota's red zone defense was pretty good yesterday. He held an Ohio State offense to, I believe, 3 red zone field goals, which is tough to do. You boat up in the red zone, and that's great. It's just, I hate talking about silver linings in a 34-point loss. I mean, you're on linebacker 4, you're now on safety 3, and for what they had for bodies out there, I thought they did the best they could. I mean, I'm going to make one thing clear here early in the episode. I'm not questioning anything with Minnesota's player efforts yesterday, and just like Luke isn't. Like, those guys played as hard as they could. They did what they could. It's just they were clearly overmatched. I mean, you look at that first play of the second half, Luke, that should give you strong 2019 Penn State vibes.
Yeah.
The exact same thing essentially happened in that game, what happened in this game, where Minnesota slot corner in 2019 was Chris Williamson. He gets caught peeking in the backfield, doesn't set an edge. The Penn State guy bounces it outside for a touchdown. What happens on the first play of the second half? Jack Henderson gets caught peeking in the backfield, gets out of his gap, gets too far inside. Tyler Newbin comes down from his strong safety position. Yes, you heard that correctly. Strong safety, because if you haven't noticed, without Darius Green and without Aiden Goosby, they shift Tyler Newbin from free safety to strong safety so that Coleman Bryson, who only knows free safety right now because he's a freshman, can play at the best of his abilities and play as fast as he possibly can. So because Henderson doesn't funnel him back inside like Newbin is expecting, all he has to do is jump cut outside, Henderson that being, and he is off to the races. There's no one there. I mean, to me, Luke, that's about the theme of for the defense this year is I think you could say, and people aren't going to agree with this and whatever, on 85% of plays, Minnesota's defense plays well. The issue is the 15% where they don't, it's not just bad. It's not just poor. It's cataclysmically bad.
Mm-hmm.
They give up these gigantic explosive plays that just change the course of the game. And it's unfortunate, but that's the reality of the 2023 defense this season, Luke.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's the thing that's been a hallmark of a Joe Rossi defense is not giving up explosive plays. If you look at game on paper, Ryan, they account Ohio State with only having one explosive play, and that being that Travion Henderson touchdown, right? The the 75-yard run. Now, if you looked at the stats and you didn't know the score, you'd be like, man, Minnesota's got to be in this game. They held Ohio State, who is typically quite explosive, you know, only to one explosive play. But the reality is they weren't because of the fact that Ohio State was able to run the ball and they committed to running the ball with a very healthy Travion Henderson. And the other reality is that Minnesota really couldn't stop them on the day. Henderson ended up with 9.7 yard average and two touchdowns, right? On 15 carries, he had 146 yards. The Gophers on the day give up 215 yards of total rushing, a 6.1 yard average. You could say that this was a very balanced Ohio State team. They typically, in history, when we've watched them, been much more explosive. But here, they're much more efficient. Maybe not as explosive, but they were much more efficient on this day. And in part, that was because the Gopher defense just wasn't able to get them off the field. But ultimately, you know, the Gophers were able to bend and not break in that first half, which is kudos to them. But the reality is Ohio State's really good, and we knew that coming in, Ryan. We knew the Gopher defense was overmatched, and you know they did about as well as I probably would have expected. I would have expected especially more explosive plays. So there, I was really pretty impressed with what they were able to do.
I mean, yeah, I feel like we're going to be playing good cop, bad cop on this episode.
Okay.
I mean, they didn't allow a ton of explosives. I mean, they got hit up the middle a couple of times, including a 26-yard one by Emeka Buka, where they just go play action and all three Gopher linebackers are essentially sniffing the back of the neck of their defensive lineman. They bite so hard.
Yeah, that's a consistent problem for this Gopher linebacking core, whether they're healthy or not. Right. Well, I guess we don't have a large enough sample size with Cody Lindenberg, but they do bite on play action way too often, and right up the seam is where they're exploited.
Correct. And that's where, I mean, I don't know. I feel for like someone like Darius Green in a game like this, where I thought he was arguably playing his best game. And I know he's been much maligned. I know fans don't like 12 because he's given up too many explosives. I get it. He was playing well in this game, and then he gets injured, and he's ruled out for the rest of the game. And that's where it's just like strong safety was already thin coming into the year because Jordan Howden had played 5 years. Not a lot of snaps were taken behind him because Howden had earned all the snaps that he received from 18 to 22. And Darius Green and Aiden Goosby have gone through it. Except now Aiden Goosby's out for the season. Darius Green gets knocked out of this game in an already thin position, now even thinner,
yeah,
with having to move your best player on defense to a position that maybe doesn't allow him to be as big of a playmaker, but it allows Coleman Bryson, the Pinstripe Bowl MVP, to play as fast as he possibly can at free safety. So, I mean, yeah, if there's a silver lining, I suppose, you didn't give up a ton of explosive plays, but in that same breath, this is still an Ohio State offense that was incredibly efficient and have had 10 different third down conversions yesterday, 23 first downs in total. So it just kind of is what it is.
Yeah, and they're just not short of weapons, right? Obviously, the headliner, Marvin Harrison Jr., ends up getting a touchdown on the day.
Just smoked Justin Wally off the line. Justin Wally is a good Big Ten corner, but that kind of puts in perspective for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody knew where the ball was going on third and goal, especially because Ohio State had issues getting the ball into the end zone. And I'm sure Justin Wally knew that the ball was going to go to Marvin Harrison. You just don't know what the route concept was going to be. He bit outside, Harrison breaks underneath on a slant inside, and that's how you get wide open at the goal line.
Yeah, and then additionally, you know, they used Emeka Abuka, obviously, in the run game. Well, I guess I don't know if it was technically the run game because there are pop passes, right? So they all probably account as receptions, but obviously they were able to get the Gophers going horizontal, and they were able to get some big plays there. But, you know, more so making the Gophers have to defend the entire field, which they already are going to struggle to do. Cade Stover was he's big. And he again had a couple of nice plays, but there you just go down the list. Even when you look into the what was it? Evan Pryor, I think, was the running back that came in at the very end. I mean, he looked good. 21. I can't remember his name now.
It's like Ohio State just has four and five star athletes everywhere on their roster, and it doesn't matter if it's RB1 or RB4. You know they're going to be real athletic.
Yeah. So all in all, you know, the defense on the day probably better than I would have anticipated. I'm not trying to say that they were good, but I think relative to expectation, I thought they did okay, especially in some of the really tough spots that they were put in. But they also had the advantage of some of the offensive philosophy and the decision making by the head coach, and the game theory definitely put them in better spots. So you got to take it for what it is. Ultimately, you know, the loss is the loss, and you can't expect to win games when you give up 37 points.
I mean, I guess if we're looking for silver linings, Joe Joyner turned the corner for a sack.
Yeah.
Which, it's been interesting. I've gotten into, I would say, some disagreements with some Minnesota media members about, I don't know where the theory is coming from that Joe Joyner doesn't play enough snaps, but I have not thought at any point this season Joe Joyner isn't playing when he isn't, or when he should be, I suppose. Like, Joe Joyner did not grade out well via Pro Football Focus yesterday. I think he had the lowest tackling grade on the entire team. Like, Joe Joyner is an elite pass rusher, and he's really starting to put it together a lot more consistently. You know, when you're flashing against a team like Ohio State, that's encouraging. But I would say, outside of pass rush situations, I don't know why you would want John the field over an Anthony Smith or a Jalen Logan Redding in run situations, but that's just a little peek behind the curtain of some of the conversations I have with some media folks.
That's interesting. I haven't even really considered that as an issue.
I truly haven't thought, and it's something we haven't even discussed all year. I don't understand that point, because I think he plays quite a bit, especially I think he's third on the D line and snaps this season. But again, just trying to give folks a little peek behind the curtain there. If there's one thing, if we're going to close up on defense already, it's just, I wish it's the second straight game, Luke, where they don't force a turnover.
Yeah.
Ryan Selig has an outstanding opportunity to do so on third down.
Yes.
Him and Danny Strigow drop into coverage. Danny goes for the pick. Ryan Selig just punches the ball out of the air. And the funniest part about that is right after the play, it's Tyler Newbin looking at him like, why didn't you try to catch it? Trayvon Jones looks at him like, dude, catch the ball. Danny Strigo's on the ground because he tried to make a diving interception or falling backwards. And he's like, what do you make a play?
Yeah.
Right. And I don't disagree. Like, Ryan Selig, you're a veteran. You're right there. Make a play.
Yeah.
Even on the first touchdown.
Yeah, it goes back to what Derek has talked about a number of times, you know, just understanding the situation. And a lot of times this Gopher defense has not understood the situation. And there have been times, not to pick on Ryan Selig, but where he takes on a block. I think it was even in this game where he takes on a block when he could have just tackled the guy, right?
We've seen good linebacker transfers such as Jack Gibbons, who's now starting in the NFL for the Tennessee Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel for Ryan Selig because the bar for transfers here is high because of how many have hit. I know he's played banged up, but it just has not been the season I think Minnesota was anticipating from that Western Michigan transfer.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that there's anything else defensively to really get to. Trayvon Jones ended up leading him with 11 tackles. That tells you that's a problem probably.
Yeah.
He also kind of got picked on, but
like we spent a lot of time on linebacker, and that's where Tyler Stolsky got the start in this game. Second year player from Michigan, a walk on over Matt Kingsbury, over Ryan Selig at Mike. I'll note.
Yeah.
Like Selig played quite a bit, but like, how did they get here? I get that question constantly.
Sure.
How did they get here? Well, I'm going to run people through it one more time. I wrote it after the game and my takeaways, but I get this. I probably got this question, I kid you not, 30 something times this week. And so I'm going to try to explain it one last time here before the Wisconsin game. Last season, Luke, who were the four linebackers?
So you've got Braylon Oliver, you've got Cody mm-hmm. Lindenberg, you've got the other guy that went to like Western Michigan, whose name is escaping.
Donald Willis.
And then I don't know who the fourth.
Mariano
Sonny Marin.
Marin. So those were your four linebackers that played a ton of snaps for you last year. Mariano graduated. He's now an intern with the program. He's up in the booth during game days. Cody Lindenberg has missed 9 games with injury now. Warmed up before this game, didn't go. Braylon Oliver transfers to Georgia Tech. Donald Willis transfers to Western Michigan. Now, let me be clear. I'm not telling you I was particularly ever high on those two, especially the way it was put to me and the way I understand it is Minnesota conveyed to them, Oliver and Willis, they weren't going to be full-time players outside of their Sam linebacker role, which is like a 40-ish percent type of role. Both of them wanted bigger roles. They transferred to Georgia Tech in Western Michigan. It would have been awesome to have them as depth, but honesty didn't sit well with them. They wanted to play. Now, I would tell you, Luke, I haven't watched any Georgia Tech. I haven't watched any Western Michigan. I haven't watched any Maction. Neither of them have Pro Football Focus grades this season above 60. So they haven't been good at their new destinations.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been great, in theory, if James Gordon or Jaquandus Burns would have panned out. Couple of recruits that would be third and fourth years, I believe, in the program. One is at South Florida. The other one's at SMU. I looked at their Pro Football Focus grades this season. Wonder if they could have helped. Neither of them have Pro Football Focus overall defensive grades over 60 either. It's like the depth that you would have had there. I don't know. Like there's a difference between having depth and I would say good depth. And that's kind of the concerning part about it to me at linebacker is they had a lot of misses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how you get to where you are right now, where it sucks that Maverick Baranowski's hurt because he was playing well as a Mike. Devin Williams has struggled here the last few weeks. And then you're forced to choose between Tyler Stolsky and Matt Kingsbury at Mike linebacker in your 11th game. So how did they get here? When you don't have any of your top four linebackers available from last season because two transferred, one graduated, and one can't stay healthy right now, that's how you get to where you are. And when the transfer that you bring in and Ryan Selig has played through injury, and when he's played, it hasn't been great at times, that's how you get to where you got to here in year 7.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the risk with the transfer portal, right, is that there's no guarantee that the player is going to pan out and play to the level that you expect or need. And you know, that's just the risk you roll. And the other reality is, like, I don't blame Donald Willis or Braylon Oliver for saying, hey, I'd rather try, I'm going to bet on myself somewhere else, right? And good on Minnesota if they're telling them, like, here's the situation. You know, there's no reason to deceive a kid and tell them something that's not true just to hope that they stick around, right?
Right.
You got to be straight up with them.
Make sure it's conveyed, like, the way I understood it, and if somebody knows more about this than me, they're welcome to speak on it. But on this specific topic, I'd argue no one knows more than me about this in this media market. And the way it was conveyed to me, none of this was NIL related. Maybe there was some NIL exchanged after the fact, but the primary reason those two left was they wanted to have bigger, prominent roles. And the way it was conveyed was, I don't know that they would, because I don't know that Minnesota was particularly high on them after last season, which I don't disagree with, but I know that people chastise the head coach for this NIL talk, and we can get into that later, but I think the bigger concern for me at that linebacker spot is I think Cody Lindenberg, when healthy, is an outstanding linebacker. I think Maverick Baranowski can be, and then you have a lot of inconsistency behind them. It's just, it's frustrating to watch, and as a media member who covers this team, and I'm sure for the fans too, Luke.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is that recruiting is never a sure bet, right? And we have to be critical to a certain extent there. Now, I think the lazy excuse is to say that all, you know, the lack of performance is related to NIL these days, and I think you bring that up, and that's a really good point. And I don't think that's all. I don't think that always is. What's the word I'm looking for? That doesn't always translate, right? Because, I mean, you can look at Texas A&M, like, apparently one of the best NIL programs in the country. Where has that gotten them, right? There's just no guarantee with NIL that every player is going to pan out. And I also think it's a lazy excuse, because these problems started before NIL, right, with linebacker and just missing. You went through guys that would have been fourth and fifth year guys in this program, and they've just been misses effectively, right? Or they haven't been developed.
Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, to me, that's kind of the concerning part is, now I think where the issue lies almost defensively, Luke, is, we can talk about it a little bit later, but I go back and I look at those 2020 and 2021 classes.
Yeah.
Recruiting classes. Goodness gracious. I mean, those are the kids that are supposed to be in their third and fourth years in the program.
Yeah.
A lot of them aren't here, and a lot of them were it was not good recruiting classes. And I think the struggle for Fleck would be, if you were to give him some truth serum, and this is me hypothesizing, this isn't what he's saying, is those classes set them back to where they are now. I know that there's a lot of talk, to me at least, from people behind the scenes, that they feel really good about what they got for young players, that they will eventually be really good players, those redshirt freshmen and true freshmen. But it's those kids who should be redshirt juniors and redshirt sophomores right now is where they missed immensely.
Yeah.
And that's how you, if you want to look even more big picture, that's how you got to where you got to right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. And then the other thing is you played a lot of guys, you played a lot of 6-year guys too, right? Even on offense. I mean, we're not talking offense right now, but you had a ton of experience and now a lot of that's gone. And you placed a lot of bets, you know, in one player or multiple players. And I don't know that it's all panned out, and that's where you get where you are. And I mean, if we go back to the very beginning of the season, Ryan, we said that there is a plausible story that this team goes 5-7 and they could go 9-3, right? And maybe we'll get on that later. Maybe we should get a break. We'll talk offense and we'll get into that later. But I think that the reality is we're seeing it play out. Just this, it's not the ideal path that we wanted to go. Ryan, you and I have raved about the Comply Foam memory foam ear tips, and frankly, I will still rave about them, you know, all the way through the holidays, etc., because I love them that much. Now, as people have gone to the website, they've probably found that big button that says Find Your Tips, and they've noticed previously that They couldn't find the Bose QC2 or the Bose Ultra ear tips. And guess what? That is now changed. Comply has an ear tip for those specific headphones. And if you have a specific headphone, click that button to find your tips, and they likely have a solution for your earbuds.
They are perfect stocking stuffers. Again, we've talked so long about the silicone tips that you have, and probably right now, if you haven't taken us up yet, on your earbuds. You've made the investment in high-quality earbuds, whether they're Bose, AirPods, Beats, whatever they may be. Get these Comply foam memory foam tips today. Stop constantly adjusting these things in your ear. It's going to eliminate the ear pain. So what we want you to do is go to complyfoam.com. Get your stocking stuffers today for your wife, your husband, your kids, whoever they may be. It's a great stocking stuffer. And when you get to checkout, use promo code GG23 to save 20% off your order. That is GG23 at checkout to get 20% off your order.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about when the Gophers were on offense. On the day, Ryan, the Gophers only amassed 3 points, and it was a 53 or 54-yard field goal. So never really threatened. Now, I know this is probably where we're going to maybe disagree a little bit more. But on the day, Ethan Calliope-Manis, 11 of 19 for 89 yards. He did have one interception. Running the ball, the Gophers only ran it 29 times for 70 total yards, a 2.4-yard average. Corey Kroom showed up again. It was nice to see him get a couple of receptions. Daniel Jackson, 3 receptions, 29 yards. Elijah Spencer had 2 catches for 14, and I think felt like the first time he had some catches weren't a touchdown. Would have loved them to be a touchdown, but they weren't on the day. We see Sean Tyler get a pass, didn't result in anything. Nick Callerup get a catch as well. But ultimately, Ryan, I think what this boils down to is I imagine we're going to talk a lot of philosophy when we talk about offense today.
I think so. If you just want to stick to nuts and bolts quick, I think the second play of the game about summed up the day for Ethan. I mean, it's Minnesota gets play action, rolling Ethan to his left. The entire play is going to the right. Elijah Spencer comes across the formation and is wide the F open.
Yep.
Here's the frustrating part is I know a lot of you like to lament Ethan's mechanics. I don't necessarily disagree at times, but if we're going to talk about this specific rep, he squares his shoulders, and it's just Donovan. Like, you would have thought Donovan McNabb with the Minnesota Vikings threw that pass because it was a ground ball. It hit 7 yards in front of Elijah Spencer, and Elijah looks up, and he's just defeated. Just knowing if he catches that, it's an explosive that could have been a game changer early on. And that's where if you're Greg Harbaugh, I'm sure Ethan has completed that in practice, and mm-hmm. It's just when this thing gets into the game against these top-ranked defenses, it's antsy Ethan again. Like, how do you design a play that is open? It's open in theory. It's open in reality. And Ethan just throws a ground ball, and so instead of 2nd and 10, if you hit that, you're at least at midfield, if not deep into Ohio State territory. Instead, it's 3rd and long, and then you have to punt. It's just I wish I knew, Luke, if we're just going to stick with Ethan here to start, I wish I knew what it was. And I think that's the frustrating part for this staff with him is you just don't know at any point now. When we've got 11 games of data this season, and I think you would agree with me if I make the statement of this way. How is it that we're still in game 11 with him this season, with him as the starter, and we don't know what we're going to get from series to series, quarter to quarter, half to half, even play to play sometimes? I don't know what to think, because there'll be games he shows progress, which I know many of you have told me I'm an idiot for thinking that, because apparently Ethan Calliope-Manis isn't even a Division III quarterback that could play at Bethel, which, as someone who lives close to Bethel, like, what are we? Stop it. Just there are so many times I'm getting closer to this happening where I'm just going to start just gaslighting the absolute crap out of some of these fans. But
Okay. But
back to Ethan. It's just that second play of the game. It's wide open.
Yeah, for sure.
And you just miss.
Yeah.
You can't miss that. And you keep doing it.
Yeah, I agree with you. That is a very frustrating thing. And I wonder if it all informs the philosophical decisions that are made, right? Because that play is missed. The other thing is we've talked about this some, and we maybe haven't focused on it enough. I can think of at least two drops off the top of my head where the one that hit Brevin Spanford right in the hands, Daniel Jackson. So Ethan had a couple balls that were there and in good spots and probably would have been, I think on the Spanford one would have been another first down, you know, where they're just not completing those. And that's not on Ethan per se, right? That's on the offense. But if you look at the stats, that falls to your average Gopher fan or your, you know, bandwagon Gopher fan. That's where they're going, well, he's not even a D3 quarterback, right? He's 11-19, can't complete them, right? The reality is not 100% his fault.
No, but, I mean, he's still got to be better.
No,
I mean,
there's no question. The Elijah Spencer one, I think, is probably part of why they took the approach they took.
You mean how they then ran, like, the next five plays?
Yeah.
And then punted again because of it? Like, when you have an opportunity to run Jordan Newbin 19 times, when your offensive line is getting beat constantly against Ohio State, you have to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
I also hear one more bleeping time how Matt Simon should be the one calling the plays. If you believe that right now, after listening to my next explanation, just unfollow me, stop listening to anything I say ever, because we're just never going to see eye to eye. What frustrates me, Lucas, is that how are we now almost at the end of year seven? We've seen Kirk Ciarrocca, Mike Sanford, Kirk Ciarrocca, now Greg Harbaugh.
Right.
And in these key critical situations, you know what it's going to be, a conservative play call. How can people not get it through their thick skulls that it's not the offensive coordinator dictating things in that specific instance? It is the head coach. I don't know how many more different critical key plays people need to see to know that there has been one constant variable that has stayed the same, and now four other ones have changed, yet the result is the same. How do people not understand that I am so tired of calling for the offensive coordinator's head with conservative play calls? It is mind-boggling to me that people cannot fathom that it's Fleck. Am I off the deep end at this stage because I've seen too much?
I think
we're football or what?
No, I think at one point we maybe didn't know, right, as a collective podcast, and I mean, we said
this is still a hypothesis.
Yeah, right. But
I think it's a hypothesis that has tangible evidence.
Yeah.
Of significant college football data.
Yeah, no, I agree with you now. I think, you know, the early years were like, what is this? Why is this happening? I mean, I think back to the 2019 season. Why do we continue to run inside outside zone in these games that are way tighter than they need to be? And you've got Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson and, you know, all these weapons. And here we are. Like, why are we doing this? And now we come to 2023 season. We have Eastern Michigan after we basically, you know, against Nebraska, we threw the ball 44 times. And against Eastern Michigan, we decided that row the boat was going to be run the ball, right? That was very much a decision by the head coach, and he said as much. I don't think he would even deny this, Ryan, right? Like, he's the one that is making these calls. I don't know that the question's been explicitly asked. I don't really know that it needs to be, because there's probably more interesting information to glean from a press conference. But the reality is like, he is the one dictating the calls here. Now, what I will say is, I get that a lot of people were frustrated in the first half. And I know that some people are saying, well, he's playing not to get embarrassed or not to lose. And I understand that. Generally speaking, I understood why he was punting and saying, okay, you got to go the entire length of the field. Would I like him to be more aggressive in that situation? Probably. But more or less, it was working. The offense just wasn't able to execute. You have to be able to execute enough to complement you know, to complement the philosophy, and they weren't. And as such, he wasn't willing to take the risk of giving them even better field position, which we eventually saw. You know, they were able to capitalize, especially in the second half. You know, sans the Travion Henderson run, right? I don't know. In the end,
where you and I disagree on this philosophy, if that's what we want to switch to, is I feel like the way I'm construing it from your words is you're okay with Fleck saying, I'm going to play to keep it close and not play to win.
So I think I'm, to a certain extent, I've always been the, like, I don't care if I lose by one or I lose by 100, right? But I'm also trying to take it, I'm also trying to understand where does Fleck come from and where, what is his ethos, right? And his ethos is very different than my personal ethos. So if I'm him in this situation, he goes, oh, okay, Ohio State, their defense is probably the best defense we're going to play all year. Their front seven is going to kill our offensive line. We're not going to really be able to run the ball. So if we're going to be able to keep it close, if we're going to give ourselves the best chance to win, we're going to do that by forcing them to hopefully make some sort of mistake. Now, they didn't, right?
But that's my question, is why would we or Fleck assume that Ohio State at home is going to be making a mistake offensively? Especially when your defense last week didn't force a turnover.
Yeah.
This week didn't force a turnover.
I think
last week gave up 49 points, and Fleck knew defensively they're on linebacker 4 or 5. You're like, why would that be the assumption? Because that isn't this year's team to me.
No.
It's previous year's team. And I get the ethos then if you're the head coach, but that's where I struggle to have this. This is where I have this disconnect, is I feel like he's coaching games that he thinks he has 2021's team or 2019's team. This 2023 team isn't that, Luke.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing with you on that. I'm trying to come from his perspective. What I think his argument would be is that by forcing them to be on the 10-yard line versus the 40-yard line, they have to run more plays, right? And as a result, you have a higher chance of maybe forcing them, getting a stop where they have to punt, where maybe you can get better field position, or forcing them into some sort of turnover. That's my assumption of what he's saying. I don't know that I agree with it. I think generally speaking, it kind of worked in the first half, but it assumes that your offense is able to execute on any meaningful level, and they weren't. Like, they couldn't do it. In part because, and you could argue, well, it's the philosophy. I mean, the other thing that we have to account for is that front seven killed us. No question. Like,
right.
Ethan was largely was not good. And I think largely because he was uncomfortable, because the offensive line was getting beat. Now, when he was given time, like you see on the Corey Crooms 32-yard reception, they were able, you know, he looked all right. But he's starting to remind me of early 2019 Tanner Morgan, right? Where you're talking about jittery, right? He doesn't trust it. So he's either not focused, or he's not feeling the pressure and then able to make a play. I had assumed, Ryan, coming into the season, that Ethan was going to be, one, have better pocket presence, but also be able to execute, you know, basically on kind of scramble type plays. And I don't know that we've been able to see that this season. Where we've seen him be best, and this is where I'm frustrated with the philosophical approach. He's been probably best in the quick game. Right where we saw him, you know, it's only in flashes, because we saw this largely in the Nebraska game, and then there were times in the quick game, like I can think back to Michigan State off the top of my head, where, hey, we're just going to have some quick throws where we don't have to think, and it's just like, go. Other than that, he's not been great outside of those kind of situations. Has he had individual throws that have been fantastic? Absolutely. But he's never found a rhythm and stayed consistent, to your point, Ryan, of what we know we're going to get, basically drive in and drive out. So then I think the question is, are you putting Ethan in a position to be successful? I'm not sure that handing the ball off 37 times is a way for him to be successful.
Then we get back into the Fleck philosophy of Fleck's going to Fleck. Like if we're going to go into specific instances within this game, I would say let's look at the second, third, and fourth drives of the game.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's
so.
Fair.
Second drive, Ohio State scores their touchdown. Mm-hmm. Zach Evans gets two carries, looks really good. Then he gets injured.
And that's again,
story of the Zach Evans.
Yeah, that's
2023 season is health.
Yeah.
And that had been the knock on him when he was a true freshman on the red shirt. That had been the knock of, you remember back in September, everybody was clamoring, where's Zach Evans? Where's Zach Evans? Where's Zach Evans? Well, mm-hmm. he finally earns reps, looks good on those reps, and now it's been the constant battle of, you can't even try and scream into the ether at me and say he's getting too many carries.
Oh, definitely.
He's getting injured before. And again, it's unfortunate. I'm just saying, like, Minnesota's a better team when Zach Evans is out there. And mm-hmm. the issue is trying to get him healthy and keep him healthy. So you get two Zach Evans runs on the second drive of the game that get you 17 yards. First and 10, 2 yard loss. Second and 12, 5 yard run. Third and 7, Tyler Cooper is eviscerated at right guard, and Jordan Newbin is immediately tackled for a loss. Like, I think, let me get through the third and fourth to get to the point here that I want to make here with Fleck, all right? So you punt it from the 44, Mark Crawford, who had an outstanding day, by the way, punts it 53 yards, puts him inside the five. Third drive of the game, Luke, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Or he crooms across the middle for a first down.
That's the 32-yarder, right?
Huh?
That's the 32-yarder, I think. Or was it? Or is it the shorter one?
I'm on the third drive of the game where it's across the middle. It's kind of thrown low. Corey Crooms gets it. Puts Minnesota at the Ohio State 45, first and 10. Run up the middle, 3 yards. Ethan gets immediate pressure, throws a swing pass to Jordan Newbin, who's eviscerated by Jack Soria. Third and 10. Minnesota actually calls what they thought was a zone beater. I think all four receivers went out. They went to the sticks. Ohio State was ready for it. Ethan scrambles. Fourth and 5 at the 40. You looked in the mirror and said, yep, we're going to punt it. Okay? Fourth drive.
So this is, but the context is you're down 10-0 at that point, right?
You were down 7-0 when you elected to punt from the Ohio State 40 late in the first quarter. Okay? Next drive, you're down 10-0. Okay, you get it first and 10 after the Corey Crooms 32-yarder. Okay, then you call a timeout, which I don't have an explanation about. It wasn't asked, and to me, I know people disagree with the media in terms of what we ask and what we don't. To me, this timeout, if the game would have gone a different way, would be impactful to ask about.
Mm-hmm.
But when you lose by 34 points, asking why you called your timeout in the second quarter is something that the head coach would look at you and say, what, you know, WTF? Like, what, to me, and I get it because it's not an incredibly impactful play. All I know is from rewatching it this morning, he calls the timeout and then immediately goes up to Quinn Carroll and like tries to calm him down. Not incredibly sure what that was about. But anyways, after the timeout, first and 10, Ohio State 47, you're down 10-0. Run up the middle. Okay. Then Ethan gets pressure, checks it down to Nick Callerup. You have it third and 5 at the Ohio State 42, and Jordan Newbin runs for 0 yards. Now, for once, I'm not going to blame the play call here because I don't know what Jordan Newbin's looking at. I highlighted it in my GIF rewind, Luke.
Yeah.
It's outside zone left, and Jordan Newbin doesn't somehow see a laneway between Ariante Ursary at left tackle and Greg Johnson at left guard.
Yeah.
If he just runs that, you get positive yards, if not a first down, but he cuts it back right into Jack Soria, and it's I don't understand what Jordan Newbin saw there.
Yeah, I'm glad you highlighted that because I was going to bring that up if you didn't. On that play, I didn't necessarily disagree with the play call. It is a tendency.
It's there. It's just
it was there, yeah.
Which is so. It's almost the story of the season for this Gopher offense. Is this isn't 2020 and 2021 where you, myself, and Derek Burns lamented and lambasted Mike Sanford's play calls because the play designs weren't there. Nobody was open. I would argue Greg Harbaugh's designs are open. Players just aren't executing, which is a different coaching issue.
Yeah, it's been a multitude of ways that it hasn't been executed, right? Like the execution has been, you think back to the North Carolina game, there were guys running all over wide open and Ethan didn't hit them, right? The other thing that we should note here, and I keep thinking I want to bring this up, the injury to Lamecki Brockington also has played somewhat of a part. He was playing better, and I obviously feel for him, an injury suck. It's just part of the game, but would have loved to see how he could have been an impact, you know, through this season for them, because I'd argue he was by far their second best receiver before the
Chris
injury.
Bell, to that, to your point, yes, was the lowest graded run blocker on the entire Minnesota team yesterday.
Yeah, he's not been great.
It hasn't been the season Chris wanted, and it sucks that this is going to be the lasting memory for many Gopher fans of Chris Ottman Bell, because it's the last one. But I guess the point I want to make here, just with Jordan Newbin, is he's a great story. He's a great kid, but he's now gotten three games of significant carries since the Michigan State game, where he got 40 for 204 and he forced 10 missed tackles in that game. He has 54 carries in the last 3 weeks, and he's only forced 5 missed tackles. Like, that's, if you are going to be PJ Fleck, and if you are going to be a run-centric offense, it just, to me, amplifies the issues that you have, because Darius Taylor misses his 5th straight game. You're just not very consistent at running back right now, I'll say.
Yeah.
And again, this isn't meant for me to be taking shots across the bow at Jordan Newbin.
No.
But folks, he was running back 5 coming into the season for a reason. He's a good runner. He runs hard, workmanlike. But the stats are the stats, where if you've only forced 5 missed tackles in your last 3 games and you got 50 plus carries on those, mm-hmm, the way that this Gopher offense is currently constructed, it's tough to stay on schedule that way.
Yep. And to your point, I think there have been times where plays are there, and you know, we're used to the Mo Ibrahim vision, and you know, Mo is conceivably almost never made the wrong read, almost, right? And here, you know, we started with Sean Tyler, who seemingly rarely made the right read. And then Jordan Newbin, I think his vision's been better than Sean Tyler, but yeah, I think you get the point. Right. And then when there are plays there and there are holes, you know, there maybe just isn't the Darius Taylor, you know, top end speed or athleticism to turn what could have been a 3-yard or 4-yard run into an 8 or 12-yard run. Right. But all these things are excuses, right, that we're basically bringing up.
And so it comes back to, that's why everyone was so upset, including myself, about the way it went on those second and third and fourth drives of the game, where the game's still within reach. It's 7-0 or 10-0, and you're punting from the Ohio State 40-something when do you understand what I'm trying to convey here, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
I feel
it,
like,
but
you
I also
and I are just so are on different wavelengths.
No, I get where you're. I understand what you're saying. I'm glad you recognize that. On the one play, it was there. Newbin just didn't execute, right? Because that was one thing I was going to bring up. Generally speaking, I sort of think that in this sort of situation, it's pretty similar to an analogy my wife uses all the time in her legal practice, right? So when she's going into trial, she has a lot of the evidence in front of her, right? And she knows that the evidence probably is against her, right? But you can only work with the facts that you have. So when you take that approach, as you dig in and you try to build a plan, you know, you often think to yourself, okay, well, if this breaks this way and this breaks that way and this breaks this way, we might have a chance. But the reality is, when you're basically looking kind of with, and I think we do this as fans all the time, whether it be the full season or this game, the reality is like the other team's trying too, and they're also really good, right? And I think PJ, probably to a fault, he doesn't think with what my wife would call like trial goggles, right, where you're so focused on what you have. he's thinking so much kind of bigger picture of like keeping it close, and that things are gonna go bad, and this is where his risk aversion comes in, right? That, you know, he's now made a decision and philosophically is going to be take the risk of reverse approach to prolong the chance that we might be able to stay in it and that it doesn't get out of hand, versus probably running into the inevitable, which is Ohio State's so much better. Like from an athlete perspective, we are decimated on defense and in the running back room, right? And so he's not going to take that risk, and he's just going to prolong and hope that something breaks our way, instead of, you know, let's, as fans, we're thinking, well, if we throw here and we complete this pass, we're good. You know, we're giving ourselves more of a chance, where he's saying, well, I'm going to punt and we're going to play defense and hope that something else happens. I think both perspectives, I can see the value in both of them, but it's just ultimately, you know, I think we're so ingrained in his risk averseness that we aren't really willing to accept the fact that, you know, we were probably just delaying the inevitable in this situation.
And that's where I struggle, is, you know, the inevitable was coming. You knew at some point Ohio State was going to break this thing open, because your defense just isn't equipped to withstand Travion Henderson and Marvin Harrison Jr., et cetera.
Yeah.
So why not, when the game was still within hand and you're still within, like, the thing that I struggle with him is, so Minnesota elects to punt in both of those scenarios from the 42 and I think the 40. Ohio State still gets points on both of those drives, Luke. Like, he can't even point to, well, you know, we pinned him deep, which you did.
Yeah.
They did. They still got points. Yeah, they had to drive more of the field. But what does that matter? Like, you need to, when the game is still within hand, show to, I guess, your fans, show to your players that, yeah, the passing game sucked, but you still got to go to it. You still got to play to win the game. You played to delay the inevitable, which that's what bugs me.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I'm trying as hard as I can to play devil's advocate here.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. It's just, I just don't feel like at any point Fleck thought, yeah, we could win this game. Which,
but the reality is, like,
a 28-point underdog. I didn't expect you to win this game. Luke Buehr didn't expect you to win this game. Your fan base didn't expect you to win this game. And that's where, after the game, he was asked about it. And poor Randy Johnson from the Star Tribune, Fleck turns it back on him in a playful manner, not confrontational, playful. Someone who interacts with PJ Fleck every single week. I know his tones, okay? In a playful manner, he asks, what would you have done? And that's where Fleck gives his reasonings. And I feel like his disconnect here would be, he thinks it's about not going for it on fourth down.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it, but he's missing the point in terms of the play calls on third down. Those are the ones that are the most consistent thing year after year after year after year. It's those third down conservative play calls, and I just cannot.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how he is believing that that's what he thinks people are upset about.
Yeah. The thing I,
for him, not, there is a part of it that's not deciding to go for it on fourth and five. That is certainly part of it. But the larger point that I think he's missing is, he, like, if you were to tell him right now, that's not what it's about, more so, it's more so about those third down play calls, he would look at you and say, well, yeah, they just weren't executed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue to this, Luke, and to the Jordan Newbin point specifically in this game, and not to, again, pick on him.
Yeah.
But I feel like the one situation this year that Minnesota's offense has been horrifically bad at is those plays.
Mm-hmm.
Those plays where it's third and medium from, say, the opponent's 30 to 50, okay? They have been absolutely horrendous at gaining positive yards, to where if you gain positive yards, you put Fleck in a bind where it's actually fourth and one, fourth and two, and he loves to come out and say every single week, I would have gone for it. Well, yeah, that's great in hindsight, but your third down play calls are never executed, mm-hmm. and so you never get to be put in that spot. Like, that is the one play this year for the offense that I'm going to remember.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Is third and medium. You were absolutely just dreadful in those spots. And they, it's been that way for 11 games, Luke.
Yeah. I think the one thing that we always have to keep in mind too, is when we break these games down, and especially as fans, like we get the value of hindsight, right? We always get to, we know either the total outcome of the game or, you know, drive to drive. And we also, we don't have the responsibility of making those decisions. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, PJ should be absent of getting heat or pressure, you know, the way he approaches games, because I've been frustrated with that. But the other thing is, it's really easy to sit from my perspective and be like, yeah, you did it wrong, right? Because I don't have any skin in this game other than as much as I care, right? That I think ultimately is really convenient. I didn't see the press conference, but I would have liked to know like how Randy Johnson responded to that question, or if any of us are put into those situations. In my work all the time, right, I'm trying to make the best decisions possible with imperfect information. And largely PJ is trying to do that. PJ and staff are trying to do that too. And the reality is, and I think this is where my frustration comes in with PJ, is that he has made decisions. They haven't always panned out, and it feels like he's been unwilling to kind of change his approach and change his best. And the irony is that he has that statement, change your best. That I think, in business for me, there's so many times where I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I'm trying to make the best decision possible with that imperfect information. And then I try and use that information and make a better decision the next time. I'm not sure that it feels like in a certain extent, he's making his decisions from a card, not that he's actually learning from that experience that he's had previously.
Yeah, and again, I know there's a lot of fans that are very emotional right now, and they're saying, fire Fleck. Okay.
That's a bit of a...
Well, let me say, you can think whatever you want to think. I'm not here to tell you otherwise. I would tell you Mark Coyle, before the game yesterday, was on with Guardsy on KFAN. By the way, the much maligned Justin Gard, because he wasn't allowed to do his job down on the field by the Ohio State people, which we'll get that full story on Parent Spare this week. But Mark Coyle said yesterday before the game, I'm absolutely convinced PJ is the right guy.
What else is he going to say?
Well, could he pull a 180 14 days later and fire him?
Yeah.
I guess anything in life is possible. I would just tell you, I have heard nothing to make me think, regardless of the outcome next week, that PJ Fleck is going to be fired.
I mean, we have to continue to have the conversation of, what are your expectations for this football program, right? Like, I think the reality is, we've had a 2019 season that was 11-2, correct? We had the 2020 season that was 3-4. You're going to have to remind me, because the records are so similar in 2021 and 2022. But like,
they were 9-4, and they were above 500 in the Big Ten.
Now, how often has that happened? Like, the reality is that Minnesota is not, it is not Ohio State, right? It's probably not even Michigan State. And he has elevated your expectations because there has been more winning. Like, this kind of season is almost inevitable. It's happened at other places as well. You think of the rise that, I'm thinking way back, but like, Illinois went to a Rose Bowl. They went back down. There's gonna be ups and downs with this, and that's back to our conversation earlier in the season, Ryan. It was 5-7 or 9-3, and if you look back, could they have had more wins? Absolutely, things would have had to go their way. You think back to the 2019 season. Could they have had more losses? Absolutely. In the non-conference, they probably could have had two losses. Like, things
happen. Not three.
What? Yeah, if not three. Yeah. And that was arguably the best season that the Gophers have had in most of the people listening to this lifetime, right? like things haven't gone our way. And are there reasons to be frustrated? Absolutely. But we're still within the parameters of what we thought was possible, like, and probably realistic. And I get that's frustrating. We can still go 6-6. You could end up having both the axe and the pig, right? You already have the pig. And I'm not trying to tell people that they can't be frustrated, because you can. I'm just trying to look at it with a little bit of objectivity. If I'm trying to be honest with myself and remove some of the emotion from it, is that this kind of season probably is inevitable for a Minnesota program. There are reasons to be frustrated about it, whether it be, you know, linebacker recruiting, or there's probably more that we can get into there. But, we could get into the whole Ethan thing, right? They put all their chips on Ethan, and it hasn't been the the exponential rise that they maybe would have expected in quarterback play, right? Like, they made bets and not all of them have panned out. And that happened in some of these games too. And I can legitimately see a way that this Gopher team could be sitting right now, you know, 7-4 right now. Would people be as mad? I think people would be still pretty mad about this game.
Right. And that's where, again, if you just win the Northwestern and Illinois games, number one, to your point, you'd be 7-5.
Yeah, 7-4 with the potential going 7-5. But you're not. That's just the reality.
So you'd be 7-4. You'd still be in it potentially in the Big Ten West, even though I don't know what the tiebreakers would be. So don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But I want to finish with two things before we just burn this game forever. You mentioned Ethan and going all in on Ethan. That has been the theme that was going to define the PJ Fleck tenure to me. After they got through Tanner Morgan and what he provided, they have been all in on Ethan Calliope-Manis going back to his recruiting process. What do I mean by that? Well, you go back. When Minnesota got Ethan Calliope-Manis committed, I believe it was 2020. Now, Ethan is a part of the 2021 recruiting class. Okay? We're all on the same page. In 2019, Minnesota took two quarterbacks, Cole Kramer from Eden Prairie and Jacob Clark from Texas. Jacob Clark, obviously no longer with the program. I believe he's the starting quarterback now for Missouri State, which is in the Missouri Valley Conference. Okay. You did not take a quarterback in the 2020 class. Why? Because you took Ethan Calliope-Manis, and that was the deal you made with the devil. No, we're not. You don't even have to say deal with the devil. That was the deal you made.
But let's also not gloss over the fact that he didn't play in the fall of, was it 2020, and he played in the spring, right?
We'll get there to eighth, and I just want to give complete context the way I see it and the way I know it. Okay. So you don't take a quarterback in 2020 because you have Ethan. So you sign Ethan, he's the only quarterback in that class, and then you take Jacob Knuth from South Dakota in 2022. And now here we are. Well, the issue with that is Jacob Clark is no longer here. He's with Missouri State. Jacob Knuth is now at Kansas State. So you're left with, how did we get to Ethan Calliope-Manis in year three? Cole Kramer is a senior, and Drew Vioto and Max Chikanjanski as true freshmen. That's how you got there. Now, to your point with Ethan, the ride for Ethan hasn't always been bumpy either. The ride has been, he gets injured, I believe, in his junior season, misses time. His senior season is during COVID. It happens in the spring. It's limited reps. And then he comes to Minnesota. He was very much a raw and unfinished product. And you have seen that throughout the course of his now, I believe, 17 starts. But where I just, like, how did we get here? That's how he got here.
The other thing to keep in mind, though, Ryan. Like,
he's also on his third offensive coordinator in 3 years. He had Mike Sanford. Yeah. Kirk Sciarocca recruits him. Mike Sanford gets him for year one. Kirk Sciarocca comes back for year two. Now it's Greg Harbaugh. And now this is my final plea to people with this specific topic. Why do you want to see Harbaugh go where Ethan would then be on his fourth offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach in 4 years? Do people not see the history or like repeating mistakes of yesteryear? Because you know who that reminds me of?
Luke, yeah, Adam Weber.
Adam effing Weber, which I've talked to Adam Weber before. Like, he never got a fair deal. And so, yeah, maybe Ethan isn't even the caliber of quarterback that Adam Weber was, but you'll never know if you continue to change everything for that young man each and every season.
Yeah, it's not doing him any favors, to your point. And the other thing to keep in mind is, correct me if I'm wrong, he's a sophomore eligibility-wise.
He's only a third-year kid.
Yeah. So he's got
17 starts, and I know it's been rocky. Trust me. And that's where I would be. We'll see what Cole Kramer decides, but I talked to him before the season, which was the last time he had availability. He told me he plans on exercising his 2024 eligibility, his final year. Now, I would probably wager that it won't be at Minnesota, because he can transfer to, say, a St. Thomas and be the starting quarterback there in an FCS program potentially and not be a backup here. Which, if he transfers, then that exponentially increases transfer quarterback coming here, even with Drake Lindsey and his 87 passing touchdowns in high school to only 5 interceptions.
Yeah.
But I would just tell the fan base to temper your expectations for a transfer quarterback. Why? Because that requires hella NIL. I deal in the recruiting world every single day of my life, and I have for over a decade now. I know what the price is, okay? And it's going to be, you're not going to get this highly touted Quinn Ewers type of quarterback. You know what the reality is? You're going to get an FCS transfer or a Group of 5 young player. And then that's going to be your transfer. That's the reality of it. So I don't want to hear these unrealistic expectations if and when Minnesota does dabble in the transfer quarterback market, because that's the reality, Luke.
Sure. Yeah. Ultimately, on the day, the Gophers only score 3 points. We should give special teams a little props here. Like you said, Mark Crawford, probably his best punting effort to date. And the Serbian Hammer absolutely drills a 54-yarder. Like, let's go.
Yeah, Lou Groves, a semifinalist. Dragan Kesic, he now has 3 50-yard field goals on the year. Coming into this season, Minnesota was 2 of 8 from 50-plus with their place kickers the last 4 seasons. Dragan alone has beat that mark in 11 games. It's been outstanding. I have much maligned this punt game for many, many years. Wrote about it before the season. But the stats are what the stats are. They are 4th in the Big Ten in net punt. That should be applauded. Mark Crawford had a really good day. And I wrote about that after the game. So for those of you who always say special teams is a bit and I don't see it unbiasedly, I gave them credit. I still shake my head every time there's a return, Luke. How is the return game in such a spot in year 7 where they don't even try? Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. But yes, Dragan Kesic and Mark Crawford should be applauded. The only other thing I want to touch on with this game before we talk Big Ten is, would you agree if I made the following statement? And this is from our friend Frothy. Frothy Gopher, Still Got Hope 1 on Twitter. A very rational man that I have a lot of respect.
I respect for him too. Have met him in person a couple of times. What's crazy is, like, 5 years ago, he maybe wasn't always rational about Gopher football. So I'm excited to hear this.
So he tweeted out this morning, and I think it's important for people to hear, you know, and I'll paraphrase some of it, but, you know, calling for Fleck to be fired it's not going to happen. But he makes the point, and I agree with him in this. His philosophy, and I quote, "His philosophy, while immensely frustrating, has won a lot of football games the last 4 years. He's left a lot of meat on the bone, absolutely, but suggesting another coach would have done better in similar circumstances, while possible, has no modern historical precedent."
Yes.
He's earned the right to have the opportunity to change or not. And this is what I think I want to discuss with you. You know, we've won quite a bit, and the program is in as good a shape off the field as it's ever been. And if he doesn't change, we will probably have 2 more seasons like this and he'll probably get fired. There's evidence to suggest he won't change. The offensive coordinator's having the same issues, management, risk management, Rob Wenger, et cetera. But he makes the point that I wanted to touch on here. The future hasn't happened yet, so there's no basis for guarantees he'll never change. He's 42. It can happen. So this is where I agree with him on this. If this, to me, and maybe it's ageist of me, and I'm sure this fan base will scream at me for this and I'll get some angry emails, I do believe age is important here for this statement, that Fleck can't change. If Fleck was 65, I would tell you right now, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. More than likely, he's not going to change, but he's only 42.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the season? Is the pie in the sky question, Luke? Is this the season now that the 42-year-old head coach adapts, where he makes changes to his risk management in the offseason, makes changes with some certain coordinators, et cetera, because he's earned the equity to me to have the right to change. Now it's up to him to make the change, but do you agree with what Frothy is essentially putting out there?
Oh, I think Frothy and I are on the same wavelength there. If you think that he hasn't earned the right to have a season like this, you're either living in a world that I wish existed, because this is our reality, is that it's really hard to win here, right? And I think he's done a pretty reasonable job. Now, the other reality is, I think Frothy laid this out well, is it does feel like there's still meat on the bone.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Both statements can be true.
Yeah.
He's won, but there's also been more opportunities for him to win.
And he can
the opportunity.
I can say to PJ, like, your risk aversion is costing us games, and he can turn back and he goes, my risk aversion probably also won us games. And I think he can make a plausible point to that, which I think
Frothy can be true.
Yeah. And I think both can be true. I think the bigger question is, as he gains more experience, will he be willing to change? And I think that's a good one. I don't know that I have the answer for you now, Ryan. I think we thought we saw coming into the season, we saw in the Nebraska game that they were going to change their approach, right? So we have a data point for that. I do think that there have been instances where they have taken more shots that they wouldn't have previously. I think back to like the North Carolina game. I think of the Illinois game and the shot to Daniel Jackson. Like, there were instances where they have been more aggressive. I think the defense has put them in a really tough spot. If they had the complementing defense, they would have won more games. And I think we would have been looking back like, we saw a minor evolution in PJ this year. But because we're sitting in a situation where we're 5-7, or sorry, where we're 5-6 right now, I think the reality is that we aren't willing to look at, did he make some philosophical changes? Now, that doesn't mean that there have been some really frustrating approaches. Northwestern obviously comes to mind. Obviously Illinois comes to mind, but ultimately I think we have seen a little bit. Can we see more change out of him as he ages? That will be the very interesting thing. And I'm sorry that I basically didn't answer your question, but I tried to give you some evidence of, like, I think it has changed a tiny bit, not a ton. But it just has to
change more, is what we agree on.
I think the thing is for PJ, it's a trust issue, right? And right now I don't think he trusts the passing game quite enough.
And he hasn't since 2019. And that's the crux of,
yeah,
it's a whole off season episode,
but they found, you know, they've brought in some players, right? That
it just hasn't been executed.
Yeah. It hasn't, like, if, let's not, I'm not going to go through hypotheticals, but like,
there's no point.
But ultimately I think it does come down to a trust issue.
And now you have an opportunity next week before we get into some of these Big Ten games where Wisconsin comes to town. Wisconsin's just okay. Just like we thought coming into the year, Wisconsin shouldn't have been the preseason West favorite. I'll say it, 'cause I'm sure there'll be some Badger fans listening to this. Like, they were just okay. And they won yet last night in overtime against Nebraska, because Nebraska's just Nebraska. It's like Nebraska, Wisconsin was the Minnesota, Iowa, where,
yeah,
Minnesota could never get over the hump against Iowa. Nebraska just seemingly always finds ways to lose to Wisconsin. But like, this isn't a great team. Like, they're okay. You can win this game for the third straight time, which would be a 3 straight wins for the first time since the mid 80s. You'd win the Axe and the Pig for the first time in the same season since, I believe, 1991. Like, that should be celebrated, but yes. You also can celebrate that if that happens and also be upset with how the season went. And I feel like people think it has to be mutually exclusive, and it doesn't have to be, but we'll preview that game on Wednesday, Luke.
Ryan, again, Burns Insurance Agency has been a longtime sponsor of this podcast. A number of our listeners have been able to save money going into this holiday season. Open enrollment for benefits is happening now. Why not take a look at your other insurance for your home, auto, maybe your boat, maybe your UTV, whatever it may be? Now's the time.
I don't know what more push you need, but especially with Black Friday coming up this week, if you think you're paying too much for your home, auto, commercial, whatever it may be, go to the independent insurance agent who I can verify has saved over, I think, 6 or 7 different Gopher fans just this month. Hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year when they switch to him. He's got access to over 20 different insurance companies to give you the best coverage at the best price. Plus, you'll be helping out a Gopher fan. So if you think you're paying too much, go to the independent insurance agent. Check them out online at insurancebyburns.com or email him, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group is driven with a passion for the University of Minnesota and a deep commitment to supporting its athletes in name, image, and likeness. How do they do that, Ryan? They do that by taking 1% of the purchase price and giving it to Dinkytown athletes to the sport of the buyer or seller's choice. One question, Ryan, that we get actually pretty frequently is, hey, is Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group a new real estate venture? No, these folks have years and years of experience selling around the entire state of Minnesota.
So if you do not have an insurance agent, you're thinking about selling your home, what I want you to do, go to teamdinkytown.com. They've already sold their first property there for $50,000 over asking, and 1% of that purchase price goes to Dinkytown athletes. So teamdinkytown.com, check them out, or you can just give them a call, 612-250-8562.
All right, Ryan, this was week 11 in the, I guess technically week 12, but the 11th game for many of these teams. And we should get through these as it's going to set the stage to a pretty interesting matchup, obviously, between Ohio State and Michigan, because both are undefeated, because Michigan found a way against Maryland, Ryan, 31-24. Michigan got out to the early lead and Maryland came storming back in the third, and Michigan, of all things, got a safety to close the game out. But they survived.
Grounding in the end zone.
Yeah,
it was... It was a back and forth. Maryland gave them a run for their money.
Yeah.
But I would just say Michigan outlasted them. I think Michigan may have been looking ahead a little bit to that Ohio State game, but it sets up the matchup. 11-0, 8-0 versus 11-0, 8-0. Big noon next week.
Can you confirm there were no tears though this time?
I'm so over.
I know you're so over it. So and over can Michigan we drop the
proclaiming themselves as America's team? I never want to hear, by the way, the word Michigan men used ever again.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
Because it's the biggest crock of crap I've ever heard.
It's always been crap, but now it's like verified, right?
It's so. The definition of I hear what you say, trust what you do.
Yeah.
And I hear Michigan men, and then I see what Michigan men do. Stop, mm-hmm. Stop
Do you know Uncle T?
You mean Mr. Tom Brady?
Is it Tom Brady? I mean, I just love that it's Uncle T.
I would. It seems Uncle T screams to me something Tom Brady would go call himself.
Okay,
his adult children. On the mouth.
We got to get off.
I'm getting sidetracked.
Yeah, we got to get off this one. Okay.
Yeah.
Rutgers at Penn State. Penn State 27. Rutgers 6. Not a particularly close game. I know that it was 6-10 at halftime. But Penn State finds a way of scoring 14 in the fourth, leading to this 27-6 outcome.
Rutgers loses their third straight ranked game in a row. They've had Ohio State, Iowa, and Penn State consecutively. God bless Minnesota East with Joe Harris, Simiak, and Kirk Shiraka. Now they get to finish with Maryland next week at home. Penn State, Death taxes, and Luke Buehr, I proclaim to the world, Penn State only wins games by double digits when they're not playing Ohio State or Michigan, and that fan base wants nothing to do with it.
All right. Iowa, like we both predicted, won the Big Ten West outright. They're now 9-2, 6-2 in conference. The Gophers did beat them, and they beat Illinois 15-13. What a score. Absolutely love it. And Iowa starts the game with a safety, Ryan. The first quarter ends 3-2, just like a good baseball game. Ultimately, Iowa does need to come from behind. They trailed 13-9. Caleb Johnson with a 20-yard touchdown run that puts them up. The PAT ended up being blocked. And you know, you gotta credit Phil Parker and his defense. Sans Cooper DeJean, they find a way. And you know, as much as we're frustrated the way that Iowa wins football games, it might be ugly, but they win.
That's what happens. And you got pretty good special teams, pretty good defense, if not elite defense, and then Deacon Hill doesn't turn the ball over. I mean, that, I think Iowa, even sans Cooper DeJean, had something crazy like 10 or 11 PBUs on the day. Phil Parker is one of the best in college football, or even Brian Ferentz's offense, 281 yards of total offense. It's better than what we've seen before. Plus, they're starting to get Caleb Brown going a little bit, who's that Ohio State transfer that they took. So, credit to Iowa. They're 9-2, 6-2, and they're going to be the 24-point underdog victim in the Big Ten West title.
All right. So, Michigan State played my fighting Tom Allens and get the 24-21 victory, moving to 4-7, 2-6 in conference. Indiana 3-8, 1-7. If you looked, it was not a well attended game, Ryan. Ultimately, the battle of these bottom teams goes to Michigan State.
My favorite play was the game winning touchdown, where Malik Carr is a gigantic human being. He's their tight end, catches a pass, and just all I could hear in my head while watching it is Chris Berman going rumbling into the end zone for the touchdown.
Yeah, the 36-yard touchdown.
Chris Berman impression. Never asked me to do it again. I'm sure people are giggling to themselves.
Yeah,
but poor Tom Allen, that $20 million buyout, not even at home can get you that win.
All right. Northwestern gets bowl eligibility with a 23-15 win over the Purdue Boilermakers. And you might say, hold on, Purdue only scored 15 points, but we got to put the disclaimer out there. They were without Hudson Card. I think they were without a couple other players too.
They were without Hudson Card, their star quarterback, their starting quarterback, who obviously played really well against Minnesota the previous week. Yep. Minnesota somehow knocks him out of the game. And then their best pass rusher, who leads the Big Ten in sacks, also got knocked out and didn't play in this game. So when your best player in offense and your best player in defense don't play, even if it is Northwestern, and even if you do run for 300 yards, you still don't win in Ryan Field.
All right, Ryan. Another thing we have to say a small piece for what was the flip-flopping win-loss. Now Northwestern has won two games in a row. It was a beautiful thing that just had to end, I guess.
Death taxes in Northwestern playing their tail off at home this season.
Yeah.
I'll say that too.
All right. And then you mentioned it already. Wisconsin finds a way and gets bowl eligible against Nebraska. They move to 6-5, 4-4 in conference. The Cornhuskers move to 5-6, 3-5 in conference, where they'll go and take off, or they'll go and take on Iowa. Obviously, Wisconsin will travel to Minnesota, and they're already bowl eligible. You know, Ryan, you already mentioned it, but Nebraska can't seem to get out of their own way sometimes.
I got to find the stat. It's from my counterpart down in Nebraska, Mike Schaefer. I didn't realize how insane this stat is. Be ready for it. Nebraska in overtime. Okay. Nebraska has not scored in an overtime game since 2014.
Oh, wow.
That is three different coaches, untold different players, and the same result. They haven't scored in overtime since 2014. That's nearly a decade.
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
How are they so bad in overtime? But Nebraska gets out to a hot start, a couple explosive plays. Wisconsin rebounds. Braylon Allen ends up playing in this game, gets two touchdowns and I think 22 touches. So we'll see what he looks like. I know what it's looked like historically against the Joe Rossi defense. Tanner Mordecai was fine, 18 of 28. But I think the big note defensively, for maybe the biggest note I take from this game, is Wisconsin's best player on defense, Hunter Wohler, got injured in the second quarter and was ruled out at halftime with an upper body injury. If he does not play next week, that is significant in this game. So that'll be something I keep an eye on. But it's an okay Wisconsin team. Minnesota's won two straight. Let's see what happens when rivalry games end the season here.
All right. I want to thank everybody for listening. Derek Burns should return with us for the Wisconsin breakdown. And then, yeah, continue to support our sponsors. We really appreciate you listening. And go Bulldogs.